The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Everybody, we got another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you, but before we do that, would you guys like to play a game?
Game?
Yes! Let's do a game. Let's do it. I like games.
Yes. All right.
I like games. Love games.
So, we're gonna, for fans of Doug Loves Movies, we're gonna be playing the Leonard Maltin game today. But in order to determine who goes first, we're going to be playing Build a Title. The rules are: start with the title of a movie, then you add a title of another movie either to the beginning or end of the original title. You don't have to worry about the, a, or an, and you can use the sounds. It doesn't have to be the whole word. Does everyone know and understand the rules?
Sort of.
Yep. I have an advantage here.
And I'm gonna play this one, but whichever of you three is the last man standing will be the person who goes first, and then we'll just go in our regular order. So we're gonna start with the movie Rain Man, and then Patrick, a movie that either ends in Ray or Rain or begins with Man or Ann.
Let's see. Man on Fire, I guess.
Man on Fire goes to Basil.
Black Rain.
Black Rain Man on Fire. God, that sounds like an awesome movie title. So it has to either end in black or start with fire, right?
Or
ire. I think I can do ire.
And you don't have to worry about the A or an. So if there was a movie that was the fire or something, you can have the.
I can't think of anything that ends with black for some reason. Painted, yes, that's the only thing I can think of.
Always bet on black or never bet on black?
Pitch black?
Yes, pitch black.
Yep, well.
Sure, let's do Pitch Black Rain Man on Fire.
What about, I was going to say Orange is the New Rain Man Black on Fire.
Wow, that would have been pretty good. That's not a movie strictly, but I guess black it works.
It's true. It's not. All right.
If this first one doesn't count, I have a second one, but I'd rather do this first one if it counts. So, Pitch Black Rain Man on Fire, Walk With Me.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, because of Twin Peaks.
Okay, so Pitch Black Man on Fire Within. The Fire Within. Nice. So ends with black, Patrick, ends with
Fever Pitch Black Rain Man on Fire Within.
It's pretty good.
Oh, I have two good ones for this. So either one, Basil. Just think of John Travolta.
Inside Man.
All right.
Within Side Man.
Yeah.
Wait. It has to end with fever.
Yeah,
or
with
Within, right?
It begins within.
It has to end with fever or begin within.
Fire yeah, with inside
fire
man.
Fire with inside man, yes. Makes sense.
With inside man.
So, yeah.
Fever, pitch, yeah. Black, rain, man, on fire, within.
Yes, and I'm going to go with Saturday night, fever, pitch, black, rain, man, fire, within, inside man.
Are you writing this down, by the way, Ruben?
I'm not even writing this down.
No, I'm just remembering it.
What is it now? So, Saturday night, fever, pitch, black, rain,
black,
man.
Rain, man, on fire,
fire.
On fire.
Within,
side,
man.
Side, man.
Within, with within side, side man of the West.
Very good.
Patrick, West or Saturday?
Okay, Saturday night... Fever, pitch, black, rain, man, on fire, within, side, man, of the West, world. So
the
West
world's
world
end.
Is the movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I know it. The world's end.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
World's end.
Man of the West.
Man of the West,
end.
World's end. Uh-huh. So Saturday, or end?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Okay. This is a very
yeah.
long one.
We yeah, we're doing good. Pretty good. Sometimes these end up really badly.
Something like... Yeah, end of days. So, Saturday night, fever pitch, black, rain, man, on fire, with inside man of the West... World's end
world's
of days.
End of days. Days of thunder. So, Saturday night fever, pitch black, rain man on fire, within side man of the West, world's end of days of thunder.
Did my Shit. Thing freeze?
Yeah. Nope. I think Patrick's froze.
No.
Oh, okay.
Good point for him to
convenient
freeze.
Convenient excuse.
He's actually sitting extremely still and then using his lower hand to Google movie titles. Hey, Patrick. We're at you, and it's, are you there?
Yeah, I'm
yeah.
here.
Yeah. Okay, it's Saturday night fever, pitch black, rain man on fire, within side man of the West, world's end of days of thunder. So it starts with thunder, ends with Saturday.
Wow.
Or der. Or under.
Or set.
Or set.
Okay. Alright, so it's, what is it? Saturday night, fever, pitch, black, rain, man, on fire with inside man of the West world.
It's end of days of thunder.
It's end of thunder. Days of thunderbirds.
It's a TV show.
Thunderbirds?
It's also a film. I'm pretty sure Dennis Quaid was in it.
Okay.
I can Google that for you.
No, it's
fine. I'll Google it.
Allow me
I believe
to
you
Google
that Dennis
that
Quaid was in
you.
It.
Thunderbirds. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Bill Paxton. Not Dennis Quaid. My bad. directed by Riker.
Yep.
Apparently. Also, did not know that.
Nice.
Directed by Jonathan Frakes.
I'd rather Birds or Saturday. And you can't just say The Birds, because then you're not building a title. You're not.
I know. I know the rules. Otherwise, I would have just said The World for Westworld.
I would know one if it was just Bird.
Yeah, me
yeah,
too.
I know. I can't get Birdemic out of my head.
That's not the one I was thinking of, but that's probably better.
Thunderbird's Dimmick.
There's some Pixar short with that I think it's Birds in the title, but I can't remember it. I think I'm out, which makes me sad, because I was going to say, if Patrick couldn't think of one, I was going to say Under the Cherry Moon for Thunder. I was really excited about that.
Under the Cherry Moon, that's funny.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, like...
I forgot I could...
Okay, so I have either Birds or...
Set.
Birds...
Or sat.
Yes, I'm thinking of someone who sat by the spook who sat by the door, but that's not. This probably doesn't work, right?
Spook. Yeah, it has to end in the sat. Which is pretty unlikely that it's going to end in a verb.
I've got one.
The man who sat.
Out. Okay, actually, okay, I'm out. I actually also have to take a cold, so yeah, I'm also out. Just okay. Sorry.
Mr. Saturday Night Fever, nice. Pitch Black, Rain Man on Fire, with Inside Man of the West World's End of Days of Thunderbird. But Patrick is the winner. He's going to be going first, because I'm not playing. Leonard Maltin.
Oh, okay, so... You weren't playing?
But you could keep going.
It's just you and me now.
You can keep going for posterity.
I can win this one. I just can't play Winter Mountain. It's just you're going to be going first in Winter Mountain game.
Oh, I see.
So Mr.
If you,
or Birds.
So something that ends in Mr. or begins with Birds. Or Erds. Or ends with Mr.
The much more common Erds.
Revenge of the Erds.
This is a more fun game.
Yeah, we've all heard of that famous movie, Erdsopolis.
Turds. There aren't any Turds movies.
It wouldn't help anyway.
What if it ends? Does it have to end in the exact same letters, or can it sound like it?
No, it just has to sound like
it. Oh, it can sound
tell
like
me
it.
What it is.
Okay, so Mr. Saturday Night Fever, Pitch Black, Rain Man on Fire, Within Side Man of the West World. End of Days of Thunderbirds, or I'm sorry, of Thunder Inglorious Bastards.
Oh no, you can't do that.
I can't do that.
The other title still has to be.
It has to fit. It has to end. It has to begin with it. So it would make sense if it was like. I don't know.
Okay. Well, never mind then.
Erds Bass.
Well, like. So you can't do this one because it's not the whole title, but like Lay Mister Saturday Night Fever, like for Lay Miz, like I would count that because it's close enough.
Really?
But you can't do that because the title is Lay Miserables.
Right. Not like Mr. Rob.
It's a short.
Lay Captain Rob.
But I would count that because it's close enough in sound.
Now, if we had started with Lay Miserables, could I? No, you can't do that because it doesn't start with.
Or just using Lay Miserables, you could be like Lay Miserables Roy.
I was going to say. Lay Miserables Roy.
Are you out?
Yeah, I can't. I honestly can't add to that. We've taken this far enough.
I'm pretty happy with Mr. Saturday Night because I used two of the words.
That is a pretty good one. I don't know any movies that end with Mr. Any movie titles that end with Mr.
The only movie I know that ends with Mist is The Mist, and that doesn't count because it's not adding on. Days of Mist. The Mist. Okay, so everyone knows how to play the Leonard Maltin game, right?
No.
I sure do.
I give you three categories. You choose which category you want to do, and then you bid based on the hints how many it will take for you to get in, right?
How many clues?
I give you three categories. You choose a category.
Right.
Then once I give you the, once you choose your category, I'm going to give you some clues from Leonard Maltin's review, and then you decide how many names starting from the bottom of the cast it'll take for you to correctly guess the movie. So if I say eight names, you could say eight or less. If you think you can do it in zero names, you say zero. If you think you can do it and then also name the actors in descending order, you say negative. So if it was War Games and you knew it was War Games, you would say negative one, and then you would say War Games Matthew Broderick, and that would be correct. So when you're bidding, I start from the bottom. So if you said like four names, I would read you the bottom four names. But if you bid negative two, you have to go from the top and you have to name them in the correct order in order to get a point. And you get a point for getting it correct, or you get a point for challenging and the other person getting it wrong.
Okay.
All right, so Patrick, you're going to go first.
Okay.
Here are your categories. I Don't See Color, and that's movies that feature a talking dog.
Interesting aspect of the dog to point out there, but okay.
Dogs actually can see color. That's
that's a myth.
It's a myth. But
they're allowed to say that.
I hate when people say I can't see color, and so I thought that was a funny category. Mm-hmm. Blood Moon. That's movies where people injure their posterior. Your third category is That's Just Like Your Opinion, Man, and that's movies that made our canon that Leonard Maltin gave 2 stars or less to.
Good one.
That's
pretty good.
Oh man, the canon thing I'm obviously gonna know.
Maybe.
Let's go with That's Just Like Your Opinion, Man. I like it.
Okay, do you want a That's Just Like Your Opinion, Man from 2008 or from 1982?
Let's go with 2008. What do I say if I think I can already name the movie?
Well, if you don't want to listen to the hints, you don't have to, but then you could bid zero, or if you knew the first actor, you could bid one, or if you knew everybody in order, you can bid 12. There are 12 names. Would you like me to go ahead and give the hints, though? I mean, I think everyone
Yes, hints.
Give hints.
Sure. Go ahead and give the
Leonard Maltin gives this movie 2 stars. He says it has a thimble full of story, but takes more than 2 hours to tell, and that it's so unreal there's no emotion attached to them. So, Patrick, what is your bid? Since you feel like you're pretty confident we know it. So zero would mean no names. I give you no names. You name the movie. Negative one would mean you name the movie and the top billed actor. Negative two, the movie and the top two billed
I think I can go. I'm trying to think if I should go -1 or -2 because I'm pretty certain.
Well, Basil follows you, so he'll either say name that movie or he'll bid lower.
It goes to me. Shouldn't it go to Ilya since I was the first one to be out?
Oh, I was going with our normal.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
Recording order, and then I was just gonna reverse it.
Yeah, that's fine.
No, that works. I'm fine with going next.
Trying to make sure that I. Okay.
What does it say? It has a thimble of story.
Yeah, thimble full of story.
Thimble full of story.
2 hours to tell.
Patrick.
I'll go -1.
Patrick. -1. -1. Basil?
Name that movie. I can't do -2. I don't even think I can do -1. I know the movie, though, so I'm hoping he gets it wrong.
Patrick, you say the movie and the top billed actor, and then I will tell you whether or not you are right.
Okay, I believe it is Speed Racer, and the top billed actor would be Emil Hirsch.
Nice.
Correct. You get a
I
point.
I can't remember his name.
Christina Ricci is second billed, which surprised me.
I would have thought
it would be John Goodman or Matthew Fox.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I couldn't decide whether John Goodman or Matthew Fox would be second. So,
I thought it was
going
to be.
But Ricci. We're going by Moulton's thing, right? By Moulton's order of the actors.
Yeah.
Not like IMDb's or whatever.
Which might not.
It's like his order.
Yeah, it might not match IMDb.
Yeah. He's which often enough diverts from it. Yes. He's just named random people in the wrong order.
Alright, so
start with Ilya.
What is the way Doug normally does it is the person who got the point goes and then
Person who was not involved at all gets to pick the category, so it'd be Ilya in this case.
Right.
And then go to me.
Yeah, so it's going to go, so it's going to be Ilya, and it's going to reverse to Basil. So, Ilya, here are, I only made 5 categories, so you're going to hear some of the same categories again. But, so I'll start off with the 2 that you haven't heard, and then you can, I Don't See Race. This movie's where someone is hit by a car.
Nice.
Man, It's a Hot One. That's movies that feature lava. And for your 3rd category, we'll go back to Blood Moon, movies where people enter their posterior.
So it's Hit by a Car, lava, or ass
lava
injuries.
Lava or ass injuries.
I think
little ass injuries.
With ass injuries, I'm gonna go with Blood Moon. Yeah.
Alright, Blood Moon. Would you like a Blood Moon movie from 1997 or 2003?
Let's say 1997.
Alright. This movie from 1997, Blair Mountain gives it 2 stars. He says it's aimed at fans of the TV series, and that the film offers no real nourishment, but will appear to the audience just the same. And he lists 11 names. So 1997, 2 stars, based off a TV series, offers no real nourishment. And he lists 11
no
names.
No real nourishment.
Would you like?
I think I might know. It's not 100% sure. Maybe I'm completely off here.
Well, just remember that if you bid super low and then Patrick asks you to name it and you don't get it, he wins.
It goes to me.
Basil won't even. Oh, no. Okay.
Well, I could do it in.
Never mind.
I could do it in 3.
All right. Yeah. Remember, that's from the bottom. Basil?
Name that movie. I don't know it.
Name that movie. All right, Ilya, your three names are Robert Wool, Shaquille O'Neal, and Carmen Electra.
Okay, this was not what I thought it would be.
Wow. This is not what I thought it would be either.
It's 1997. It's Shaquille O'Neal and Carmen Electra.
Yep, and Robert Wool, who played Arliss.
Robert Wool.
Give us that Arliss.
Wool.
Wool.
W-U-H-O. Okay.
You want to take a stab in the dark?
Sure. What?
Based on a TV series.
TV series. Shaquille O'Neal.
But one of the last build.
So in a very small role.
So not Shazam or Steel.
Well, I know that in 1997, Buffy the movie was made, but I don't know if that was earlier. Yeah,
that was earlier.
Okay.
The TV show came out in 97.
That's what I had in mind. Yeah. Okay. All right. Sorry. I guess I missed it.
You want to give a guess? No guess.
I have no idea. No.
All right. It's Good Burger.
Oh. Okay, I've never heard of. That's I've never right. even heard of that movie.
Oh my
movie.
God! Good Burger. Oh wow!
Abe Pagoda falls on his butt. In it.
Nice.
The nourishment pun makes more sense now. I was trying to think of food related stuff, but I couldn't.
God.
Of course, there's butt injuries. I was thinking it was. What year did Fire Walk with Me come out? Because that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, okay. It sounds like the Twin
Peaks
movie. Did that come out in 90s? Was that 92? I thought it was. I thought it was later than that.
It was pretty shortly after the show ended.
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't think this is how Doug normally does it, but since Basil hasn't gotten to choose a category, I'm going to start with Basil and go to Patrick.
Okay.
Makes sense.
So Basil has a point, Patrick has a point. I hope Ilya has a point because I did prepare an asparagus piece. Nice. But so Basil, you've heard all the categories at this point. I don't see color movies with the talking dog. I don't see race movie where people get hit by a car, and man, it's a hot one. That's movies that feature lava.
I'm going with the hot one. Yeah.
All right. Would you like one from 2004 or 1995?
I already know the 95 one.
Really? Well, that makes my choice easier. I'm going to go 2004 then.
All right. 2004 got 3 stars from Leonard Maltin. It's about a family who lives in the Witness Protection Program. There's a shift in tone and lengthening of the story, but it all comes together and has a snazzy music score. And he lists 9 names.
I'll go 6.
Alright. 6 to Patrick.
I'll go with 5.
I guess I'll go 4.
Name it, Ilya.
Alright, Ilya.
Okay. With lava in it, right? It's got lava in it?
It has lava in it. It's from 2004. It's about a family in the Witness Protection Program. There's a shift in tone and lengthening of the story and a snazzy music score. And here are your 4 names. Are you ready? John Ratzenberger, Elizabeth Pena, Spencer Fox, and Sarah Vowell.
So, Ratzenberger, Pena?
Yeah. The only one that I recognize personally is John Ratzenberger. Yeah. Elizabeth Pena, Spencer Fox.
Who else? Spencer Fox and Sarah Vowell.
Elizabeth Pena, Spencer Fox, Sarah Vowell.
Family.
Hmm.
Oh, I think. Wait. Family lives in the witness protection program. I think
working.
Oh man, I hope this is right. 2004.
Oh,
2004?
I know what it is now. I know what it is now.
The Incredibles.
Yeah.
The Incredibles.
I know what it is now.
Woo!
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, wait a second. I was thinking crime, but then I was like, no, wait.
All right, so you're tied, and when we're tied, what we do is I read a whole review for a movie, and so you should all definitely know what the title is after I read the whole review, and then you're just going to try to outbid each other. And so Basil challenged, right?
So we should start with Patrick. He was the only one not involved.
Patrick made a bid, but he wasn't involved
so,
in the.
Wait, you're gonna read.
So
the review,
it starts with Patrick
and then
goes to Basil. I'm gonna read an entire Leonard Maltin review, and you should be able to figure out what it is instead of just clues. So Leonard Maltin gives this 1994 movie 3.5 stars. Incredibly kinetic, supercharged action yarn about an elite SWAT team cop who's targeted by a psycho mastermind and led onto an LA city bus that's triggered to explode. If you're going to make a nonstop action movie, this is the way to do it. With expert pacing, eye-popping stunts and special effects and characters who make sense. A bullseye. Oscar winner for best sound and sound effects editing, followed by a sequel. So he lists 8 names. Patrick, how many names do you need?
Let's see. Well, I can definitely do.
So the.
Oh man, you know what?
The point of this is to.
I can definitely do -1. I can definitely do -1.
I'm gonna go -4.
Man, negative nice. 4 is what I could also probably do. I'm not sure if I can do another one.
I thought this was one where you guys might know like a lot of the names.
Think about
so that's
what else is in there besides those 4? Who else is in that movie? Yeah,
there's
exactly.
Also the order.
Exactly.
And
so actually,
the order is what I'm worried about.
Name that movie, Basil, and name that order.
All right. The name of the movie and the top 4 billed actors in the order in which Leonard Maltin was.
Okay, so Speed, Keanu Reeves, Sandra Bullock, Dennis Hopper, Jeff Daniels. Did I mess it up?
Dennis Hopper is higher billed.
Wow.
That's what I
thought. So Ilya.
That was why I said -1.
Thank you, Leonard. You're weird.
I knew she wasn't
weird
as
realistic.
I was hoping that it was like because I knew she wasn't as big a star then, but I thought he might retroactively change the billing because she's...
Yeah, this is clearly one that he's edited after he did it, since he included its awards and followed by
sure.
sequel.
Okay.
I wanted to find one, like...
Who's fifth?
Doug always finds the best ones for these categories, like... Where, like, it uses words from the title and the thing,
right.
Like Transformers. This movie about cars that transform into robots.
That is pretty good.
I still can't believe that, what's-his-face, from After Hours and American Werewolf in London.
Griffin Dunn?
Citizen Kane.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Because Doug actually read... Doug accidentally read the wrong year.
Yeah, he
man.
Said he and said 1951 instead of 41 or something like that.
Yeah.
And he read the entire review.
But still, the hints were like based off newspaper tycoon Hearst or whatever.
Yeah.
One of the seminal movies of the, like, and then he gets Touch of Evil.
That is pretty funny.
Which was like 1958.
All right, guys, let's let's get this train on the road.
Let's get this mini podcast going. Okay, so everyone, we're going to be discussing 2014 Snowpiercer.
Wait, don't you have to leave, Ilya?
Yeah, in like 40 minutes. Yeah. I told Ruben that I could hang for another 40 minutes, but yeah, then I'd really have to leave.
Oh, okay.
So,
2014's Snowpiercer came out in festivals in 2013, but we're going to say it's a 2014 movie because that's when it got its wider release. Directed by Jun Ho Bong. Patrick's going to give us a little plot, and then we'll get into the context.
All right. Well, in Snowpiercer, it is the future. I believe it's 2031 is what it says at the beginning of the movie. Global warming had become such a problem that we developed a new technology to combat it, and we accidentally froze the entire world. So the only people left alive are on this train called the Rattling Ark. And the train is divided into sections based on what your ticket was when you got on. So all the rich people are up at the front, and all the poor people are at the back. And basically, the story is about a group of the...
Yeah, sorry about that.
Basically, the movie is about a group of the poor people who stage a rebellion and try to make it all the way to the front of the train so that they can take over the train and flip the balance of power. That is the plot in a nutshell.
It goes to me. All
right, so... Yeah, about
time. I like this movie. It's probably my second favorite movie of this year so far after The Wind Rises. I was pretty into it. I think that there are some ways, like, I don't know, someone I know just said that the movie just hits the nail way too hard on the head and it's pretty transparent, but I think it's a lot more nuanced than he was giving it credit for, and I'm excited to get into that.
First movie of this year that I was genuinely excited about watching, and also kind of just totally fulfilled all my expectations. I really liked it, and I also think that it gets much deeper into stuff that movies like science fiction movies should get so deep into, and that I don't see that often. And I really like that Bong Joon-ho made another, or Joon-ho Bong made another movie that's really awesome, because I like him and his movies a lot. So yeah, this was definitely great for me.
I love this movie a lot. I think I've probably liked it the most. I'm not sure, we'll see. And you know, I like all of the complaints that I've seen about it, or that it has like plot holes, or that like some elements of it are undercooked, and I couldn't exactly explain to you why, but it felt very intentional to me. Like, the movie didn't feel like a parody of those elements. I definitely wouldn't go that far, but it felt like it was playing with them in a way that I thought was interesting, but I still haven't really figured it out, so I'm hoping maybe talking about it today will do that some. Patrick?
I originally was very ambivalent about this movie. I saw it and I was just like, I don't understand what people like about this, but when I got home, I sat around for a while and did some stuff, and then like I started thinking about it again, and I was like, wait a second, this movie, it was not it wasn't saying what I thought it was saying about the elements in it, and so I ended up liking it a lot more after I thought about it for a little while.
So what did you think it was saying?
Initially I thought it was just pretty like on the nose, you know, like we need to defeat fascism or whatever like that, and I thought the ending was supposed to be like upbeat, like, oh, they survived, you know. But then the once again going to the ending of the movie, that was the tipping point for me. Was like I started thinking about other Jun Bong Ho movies, and I was like, wait a second, none of his movies end happily. None of his movies are like, yay, everybody's okay at the end or whatever. Like it's good that they survived. All of his movies end very like very sort of melancholy, I guess. And so I was like, I don't think that ending is supposed to be uplifting. I think that ending is supposed to be sad, and it's supposed to be, you know, even though the music tells you otherwise, I think that it's a very sad ending, and it's a very sad movie in that respect. Even though it doesn't, you know, give you the obvious, you know, like sad movie signposts, I really think this movie is a lot darker and sadder than it portends to be. Based on my other experiences with Jun Bong Ho and just looking at the elements again from a different point of view. So I did end up liking that a lot.
I want to hear about Basil's.
But yeah.
Sorry. Good. I want to hear about Basil's theory that he sort of hinted at in his letterbox review.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to start there.
I mean, I posted a review on Letterboxd that I assumed most people would think was sort of snarky and silly, which was just that I think that this is the most violent Coca-Cola commercial ever made. And I would say that actually, like, at first I was confused by it, and I was like, is that intentional? Like, I feel like it's weird if it is, it's weird if it's not, but I eventually sort of came down on the side that I think that Jun Bong Ho is actually doing that on purpose. I feel like there's no way you can have like a CGI polar bear look directly at the camera and not invoke like holiday Coca-Cola commercials. So in my mind, I think it, in a way, it places the movie within its own context as being part of this stream of products that are made that tell us things that we like to hear, and that this movie is sort of like making fun of that idea. I think that sort of like in a traditional movie, Chris Evans as the revolutionary hero would be like the guy that we're supposed to identify with, but by the end of the film, like, it's impossible as viewers not to really see ourselves as being like closer to Ed Harris. We're okay with making horrible compromises all the time to maintain our standard of living. I thought that the thing with the kid inside the little train thing was like sort of a metaphor for the way that like child labor is used to like build all kinds of stuff that we just use all the time. We're like, oh, I got my cool iPhone and I don't care where it came from that much, as long as I get to keep having it. And so I thought that like evoking sort of Coca-Cola, which is like the most international brand that exists, was like a pretty sly intentional jab on Jun Bong Ho's part, or at least I like to think so.
Yeah, I the more I thought about that polar bear specifically, like, the more I was like, what was this movie really trying to say there at the end? And that was what got me thinking, like, maybe it's just making fun of the elements of, like, I don't know, like, extreme climate change, like, the way movies often play with extreme climate change that way, and the fact that a lot of times when people evoke climate change, they're like, think about the polar bears who are running out of space to live and stuff like that. And it's like, why does a polar bear even fucking matter, really, like, in the grand scheme of things? Like, if the rest of humanity dies out, who cares, you know, if the polar bears are okay or not? And it's kind of funny, like, at the end we see, like, oh, we've saved the polar bears, but humanity is dead, basically. So I thought it was turning that whole thing on its head and being like, you know what? Worrying about climate change so much is stupid if it kills every human being.
Although eventually it will do it the other way.
Yeah, well, maybe I think what he was saying though is that the overreaction is what the problem was. Mm-hmm. It needs to be more of a measured reaction rather than, you know, acting crazy and being too rash about
I would say that what he is arguing is that we want to fix things in a quick way. We're like impatient dummies, generally speaking. So we're like, oh, let's just invent a chemical that'll fix our problem that we spent hundreds of years creating. And I think that, I mean, based on the host and everything else, I think that Jun Bong-ho does have like an environmentalist attitude about him, and he thinks that America just sucks at, like everything, but
for sure.
I think that it's not so much the idea of overreaction, I think, as him, thinking that we can just like fix something with like a weird band-aid that we invent rather than like a cultural shift towards like not being so awful with our stuff. Is Ruben still here? Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. No.
You looked like you were frozen for a really long time.
Frozen in thought.
Yeah, deep concentration.
You guys are kind of... I didn't really know what to think after I watched this film, except for that I was really impressed by it, so you guys are kind of off in a direction that I'm not at all prepared for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, like, I looked at that ending also like as like a wink with that polar bear and everything looking at but I also thought that there was something about it that was... I kind of liked how radical it was. Like, the whole idea was that basically putting like your trust or faith in Chris Evans as like a leader or whatever was bound to be a disappointment, because at the end he basically also accepts what Wilford is telling him and is pretty convinced by it. And so the only thing that really provides any kind of change is like basically the destruction of all humanity and the survival of two non-white kids, and that like that's the and like yeah. that's who the are, hope of who, humanity right there. Yes,
who will way too different.
Exactly.
Well, that's the thing though is like there even if they survive like. There's no way that they can repopulate the planet. I mean, I guess they could, but then everybody will be inbred and mutated, probably. And so, I mean, like essentially, humanity is doomed.
Coca-Cola version of Genesis, right?
Yeah.
And we'll finally have unified,
yes.
like, hybrid race. that white people keep wanting to happen, so they don't have to worry about racism anymore.
Yeah, that was why I thought the end of the movie was so like it was pulling the rug out from under you, because it's like, oh, they survive, and then you think about the actual logistics of them surviving, and you're like, oh, they're probably going to die anyway, because they have no food and they're in the middle of the mountains in the snow.
And that polar bear might be hungry.
Right.
Yeah. I actually didn't think about Coca-Cola at all, by the way, like, until I read your review. I guess I'm not as inundated with ads or something, or they don't...
Probably not.
...stick with me
right.
as much. All I could think of at the end was that it was a really, like... compared to what had come before, that there was something really like powerful about nature or something, even though I guess it was fake nature in this case, and that like I guess I kind of felt like the movie was like, even if it seems really terrible, it's better to go outside than be inside. Like, I thought that was one of the main things about the movie, is, like, just sitting around inside, which I thought was a really funny thing for a movie maker to say. It's, like, a really gross way to spend your life. And even if you have to destroy the entire human race in order to do it, it's better to go outside. But I don't, like, I don't know if I feel comfortable, like, with what he was saying. Like, there was a, like, weird, like, combination of, like, extreme structure and extreme looseness to this movie. Like, the, like, different train cars, you know, set it up so it's, like, almost like a video game in some way. Like, with, like, these really structured levels, and it's, like, you have, they're advancing one train car at a time, and each time they open a door, there's going to be, like, a new challenge. But then, like, other things, like, feel loose and are never, like, really necessarily solved. Like, we don't know for sure. I mean, I guess we all assume that the guy who was originally the leader of the...
John Hurt.
Back end of the train.
John Hurt.
Yeah, John Hurt. John Hurt's character. Yeah. Who I believe is named Gilliam.
Gilliam, yeah.
We never know whether or not he was actually working with Ed Harris, or if that was just something that Ed Harris... says to confuse and mess, because, you know, earlier Gilliam warns about listening to him.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He says don't let him talk.
So so that could either be Gilliam confessing, or it just could just be him knowing that he's gonna lie. Well, like, there's a lot of things about this movie that, like, could go either way, and then there are a lot of things that are, like, extremely structured in a certain way. And that was very... Mm-hmm. It made me feel very weird when I watched it, but I liked it. And it made me feel like the things that he was saying was maybe not as straightforward as they might seem.
I think the movie also... I wasn't actually for sure that I was going to be on board with the movie until pretty much the end of it, because it also just reminded me of the video game BioShock, in terms of, because that's all about, like, a parable about Ayn Rand, and Ayn Rand is super obsessed with trains for some reason, and there's no trains in BioShock, but there is a train in this, and also just, like, it's about, like, an outsider kind of going into a weird Randian world, and then, like, meeting the creator of it, and then there's kind of, like, the rug pulled out from under it, and sort of the same implication that there, that you never had any free will, and it was all sort of planned from the beginning.
And so, BioShock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you haven't played BioShock yet.
Yeah. Well, it's a 7-year-old game. If any gamers are listening and haven't played it yet.
I really liked
they
how
it, cause that game
gamers
sucks.
Need to get on board.
How the movie treated, like, the characters who moved from one train car to the next, how ambiguous the movie was kind of looking at them. Like, when they just, at some point, they, like, stop and start eating sushi. When, like, you kind of know that the people in the back are, like, waiting for them and, like, depend on them and blah. And they're like, no, let's just have some sushi, right? Like, we're here now. I haven't had sushi ever. So let's have some sushi first before we do anything else.
Yeah.
And they just, like, sit.
Some of them have had sushi.
Right, exactly.
Of them have lived
longer
than
this is, like,
existed.
Mostly,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
17 years. It's been, like, 17 years for all of them. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's supposed to be, supposed to have been 17 years.
So his, like, right-hand man I know is a train baby, and the girl from the host... is a train baby.
But
after 17 years, it's like you've never had sushi, because I doubt you would remember.
Especially
what it
after,
like,
eating human limbs, apparently, for some of the time that you've been on the train.
Oh my god, that, can we talk about that scene where he talks about
I felt like that was the weakest scene in the movie,
really, because that was the scene that I was like, that was the one I really felt like Jun Bong-ho was pulling the rug out from under everybody, because there were all these little things that led up to that going in. Like, I was confused about what he was talking about earlier in the film when he's talking about John. He's talking with John Hurt about having two arms. He's like, I can't be a real hero if I have two arms. And I was like, what does that mean? And then he starts talking about the real heroes, like, cut off their arms and stuff. And I thought that he was, like, making fun of the idea of people who are like, I feel like I'm not a real hero because I didn't, you know, serve properly or something like that. You know, because I couldn't cut my arm off. Like, I'm not a real hero. Like, that's Chris Evans' whole viewpoint. And you're like, this guy's pretty bent anyway. Like, he's pretty bent for the hero of the movie. Like, he ate babies and didn't, you know, couldn't saw his own arm off and thinks that makes him, you know, less of a hero and all this stuff. It's just, well, he has a really weird world view.
I like Chris Evans as an actor. I just felt like the speech was, like, pretty long, and it's really hard for even good actors to deliver a long speech and sort of, like, keep it,
I don't,
like,
know,
interesting.
I thought it went on a little long.
I could have used more reactions from Song Kang-ho, honestly. Like, I could have used more cutaways to him, you know, like, reacting to what Chris Evans was saying. Sometimes he would say something, like, really horrible, and then it would just stay on his face, and I was like, I could have used more of Song Kang-ho, like, reacting to what he just said. But I guess he wasn't... Song Kang-ho probably wouldn't be too impressed with that, because he probably knew what was going on. Anyway,
so what I thought that the whole speech was about was, like, Chris Evans's arc was basically all about having, like, learning how to sacrifice or whatever, and, like, that story was about him kind of, like, confessing, like, this need to be able to learn how to sacrifice, and then, like, the end of the movie basically tells him this was all, like, kind of a joke, and, like, that if he believes Wilford, then even that sacrifice that he kind of built his whole crusade on, like the idea of, like, all the faith that he put in, like, Gilliam, and, like, basically his whole philosophy of how that one man's sacrifice kind of could save, like, a whole class of people, that was kind of a joke that they played on them, or, like, a pretty cruel joke that they played on them. And, like, that kind of cuts that whole part of the movie off at the very end. So, like, I was kind of expecting, like, that the movie would be all about how, okay, well, Chris Evans will have to, like, lose his arm somehow, or, like, lose a leg or whatever at the end, and it'll be, like, somehow meaningful, but then it all ends up just not even concluding at whatsoever, which I kind of liked.
Yeah, well, I mean, he does, like, save the Octavia Spencer's son from the bottom of the train.
Right, but it doesn't really, like...
But, you know, he's pretty much... It doesn't really matter because he's pretty much going to freeze to death anyway.
Yeah, so that kind of ends there. But I don't know, like, if that, like...
He might not freeze to death.
He might not. He might get eaten by a polar bear first.
Or he might.
You don't know what's gonna happen.
He might have a long and happy life, and then die off, and the world is better off without us because we're obviously terrible.
I also thought that the song that Alison Pill sings with the children was really funny. I was laughing really hard. She's just like, if we go outside the train, we all freeze and die. For some reason, all the children screaming, we all freeze and die, was so funny to me.
Yeah. I like that scene a lot. The only time that I've mentioned it so far was that I didn't like Chris Evans acting in the long speech, I would say that uniformly, though, that I really like the acting in this. Which is part of the reason why I liked it so much, is because I normally don't notice or care about acting, but I really enjoyed
Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton.
Oh my god!
Probably is my first movie that I've seen this year where I would feel comfortable, like, nominating her for an award for her acting. I don't think my second favorite acting performance so far this year is Chris Evans as Captain America, which I don't know if I would feel comfortable giving him an award for that performance. But I liked her in this. I also liked the young girl from The Host a lot, and like her constant like wide-eyed expressions, like no matter what was going on. I surprisingly liked Ed Harris a lot, who I'm usually not that crazy
about. That was pretty
good. He was fun. I can't remember his name, and I can't Google it, but the other the guy from The Host, I liked him a lot too.
Yeah, Song Kang-ho is his name.
I liked his speech more than Chris Evans' speech when he was that like, door. I do want to go through a door. I want to go through that door. This is a bomb.
That was what I was saying. I thought, like, I don't know if the cutaways would have revealed much, because he was probably just the whole time just like, whatever.
Yeah, like,
because he probably knew what was happening. He's from the front of the train.
There are a couple of cutaways to him during that speech, though, and his reaction seemed pretty kind of spot on. I noticed that in that moment where I was like, I feel like, even though it's way easier to be a great actor when all you have to do is just, like, listen to someone else saying something and feel something, I guess, like, then take a very emotional speech and, like, make it emotional for the audience. I thought he nailed it in the couple times that they did cut away to him. There was a sort of like combination of sympathy and ambivalence about Evans' confession.
I mean, it was also definitely the best possible conclusion for that whole chronal thing for them. That was just kind of there for no reason, and there were junkies and blah 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 blah. And I was pretty glad it kind of wrapped it up in that way, because otherwise it would have been just a really weird kind of thing.
Right.
So I guess that kind of leads me to like my thing that like made me feel kind of uneasy about this movie, and why I feel like I don't have it down at all yet, is to like, if the movie is kind of against what Ed Harris is saying, which is sort of like everything in its place, like, what do you think about this movie being so structured in a certain way, in which, like, everything that was at the beginning that you're like, what is that, all comes back like a train, like, barreling forward at the end? Like, there was something about that to me where it was like, if you're on the train, you're going to end up living this way, like, no matter what you do. Like, even, like, your plans to, like, overthrow it are, in a way, playing into it because you're making the plan. And, like, you should stop making a plan. You should go out and be with the polar bears.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that sort of ties into what I was sort of saying earlier about the movie's admission that it itself is, like, a product in the stream of products that just get fed to us as consumers all the time. So, we're just...
That I thought was interesting is, you know, when he confesses that they've been eating people, like, that takes place in the past, but then he's still grossed out when he finds out they've been eating bugs.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like once you've eaten people, then you probably would not be that grossed out by eating bugs. You'd probably be like, oh, yeah, bugs, cool. That's good.
Bugs, well...
Yeah, I was actually, when that shot was shown, I was also like, wait, is that like people? No, it's bugs, right? Because I was actually expecting it to be like something worse than that. I was like, oh, it's bugs, okay.
Yeah, I was expecting people like, too.
Babies.
I mean, cockroaches are
sure, but like,
yeah,
could be worse.
Yeah, and of course cockroaches are still around. Of course they are.
But they made it into like those little protein bars. It's not like you have to like hear them like, crunching or anything like that. I don't know. I would eat
those
it.
Those protein bars look so gross though. Looks so fucking gross. The part
it
where
it looked like a block of jello.
The part where Tilda Swinton eats that the mouth noises where she eats the protein block, I was like, oh god. The mouth noises.
Her mouth was hilarious. I like when she took her teeth
out. That made her laugh really hard.
She was
Oh, that was actually an amazing
really
part in the movie
it.
Where Somehow my laughing at the movie made a whole bunch of other people in the theater laugh because, like, everyone was a little silent and, like, probably on the verge of laughing, and then somehow it struck me really hard when she took her teeth out, and I just laughed really hard, and then all of a sudden there was, like, a weird ripple effect throughout the audience of other people laughing.
Nice.
Way to go, me.
I do think that the main thing that I liked about this was the action. Which is just like the scene in the spa or the sauna especially was like to me one of the better action scenes I've ever seen. I don't know how you guys
visceral. It did that one thing though that I kind of hate where like somebody like slowly pushes a knife into somebody's chest where I'm always just like he could have just like you know just pushed it in real quick. He didn't have to like slowly push it in. That's kind of
But he's the badass guy.
But that was the thing. It was just like the way that this guy is killing people right now. He's not really like taking his time savoring or anything like that. Like he's trying to kill these people to get to something. And I'm like I feel like he wouldn't stop for that instant to like slowly push a knife into the guy's chest. He would just like you know. Shove it in as hard as he could and then like move on to the next one because he's got he's got like four other people he's fighting at the same time.
No, I actually meant the person he's killing is the like badass martial arts right. guy. I thought when they did that it was like sort of like a battle of strengths where the like weird lumbering guy is just slowly overpowering him, which is again like pretty cliche I guess, but
I
don't know.
I didn't really
understand.
I was okay
with
like,
it because I was like sad that that guy died. I was like, that guy was so cool.
He was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was like, why? I don't know. I couldn't really tell like strengths of people in this. I had a little bit of a problem with that. I was like, how is he stronger than this badass martial arts guy? Like, he's just like a dude in a suit.
Yeah, like, but like
this badass martial arts guy killed a guy with a giant hammer earlier in the movie. Like. How is he not stronger than him? I don't know.
Yeah. Because everyone has to die on the way to the top.
it's a video game.
I don't know. One of the things that I actually like most about the action is that after getting all these action sequences that I really liked and appreciated, then at the end when the that guy gets back up and he's not dead and you're like, oh, shit. Shit's gonna go down. Then his next fight sequence takes place in the background of what's going on. Like you can't really see what's like. You're like, oh, this is gonna be a really huge fight sequence leading up to something, and then it's like, nope. It's like
you just
what's his name? You know his name.
Yeah, Song Kang-ho. I just like how you see Song Kang-ho just beating the crap out of that guy in the background. Like he's not even putting up a good fight because he's so like he's already been killed once. He's basically just like a zombie. And Song Kang-ho was just like beating the crap out of him with a pipe. I did think that was kind of funny. I also thought it was funny at the end when he has to fight all the guys, all the people who were like dressed really weird from the rave, who were like coming out toward the front of the train. He's just like knocking people over into the train gears or whatever. We can get to the Googling portion now. I'm gonna Google some things here.
We need a Googling portion.
We still do, yeah.
I don't know this. I mean, I'm willing to admit that maybe like this is one of those movies that I love just because of like what it could represent and like a place where things could go, but. It just feels really strange to me and like hard to like box in a way that I appreciate it, and like I just like the same way that I felt kind of after I watched The Host. I was like, why aren't blockbusters like more like this? Like, why don't they go to like these dark and weird unexpected places? Like, you know, I understand that like a Hollywood blockbuster is not going to have eating babies in it or whatever, but there are a lot of things that are that are still like dark about this that I feel like a Hollywood blockbuster could get to, like when Chris Evans' character decides not to save his right-hand man, like, you know, the, like, two badass front-train assassins or whatever, have him dead to rights and have, like, a knife to his throat, and he goes after Tilda Swinton.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to save his friend.
Yeah,
like,
to, like, stop the whole,
you know,
fight, basically. Yeah.
But he thinks, in his mind, sacrificing one person is going to save a lot more. Although then that ends up not happening at all, because they just murder everyone.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, it's still in, like, in a Hollywood movie, they'll have, like, a scene like that,
sure.
and then he'll save everybody somehow. Like,
right.
They're not even willing to go to, like, the like an even semi-dark place.
Yeah.
They're not,
that's definitely one of my biggest
problems.
They're
not willing to make that compromise.
With Spider-Man, the movie, is that the ending, like, there's this big, you can't save both of these people, and then he just does.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is yes, I can.
And it's
gotcha.
And that's stolen from Batman Forever.
Yeah, I was going to say that same thing happens to Batman
Forever. An even worse movie. Wait, he's like, you have to choose between being Bruce Wayne and being... Batman. It's like literally the exact same thing. And then he's like, no, I don't.
I can do both.
And then that was in turn stolen from the like original story in Spider-Man where that happened and he actually couldn't save both of them.
Right. I kind of liked how...
Yeah?
Because that's how it actually happened.
I kind of liked how in this movie, after that main fight in that train car with all the guards where they all show up and they show their dead fish and like cut it open and then they slaughter each other for a bunch, like after that basically they don't really have a lot of fights except for the with this one dude who's like in this indestructible robot guy, but apart from him there's like barely any fights being even had unless something happens where like the people get suddenly really pissed off, and it's like with you know, like with the school teacher, it like suddenly gets totally crazy and she starts shooting them. But like, apart from that, they're just standing in this room forever, it seems like, and just watching this TV thing go on. And then later, when they're in the party room, they just move through it. And then like, all the people only get pissed off once they start stealing their drugs. Like, then they're like, whoa, what you doing here?
Yeah.
Give me back my drugs. And then like, suddenly they're all got weapons and like running after them. But like in a weird way, like that kind of made me feel about how if like revolutions are happening like from the bottom, like the more you get to the top, the less kind of people even care that anything is going on. Like none of them are particularly even like that adamant about like, oh wait, isn't this guy like supposed to like crush the our leader or whatever? Oh, who cares? Like he just goes on. And like and then like the more they reach like the end of the train, the more Chris, like, it seems like Chris Evans is like looking around, almost like getting ready. Oh, okay. I guess I'll have to lead all these party people too later. I guess I'm gonna have to please them in some way. Oh, this garden is really nice. I'm gonna have to keep this up. You know, I'm gonna have to make sure this garden stays as nice as it is, and so on. I like how like completely non-linear that was. Like none of it felt like a hero's journey. Like it felt like a hero's really interrupted, constantly interrupted journey, you know.
Yeah. And also just like the idea of logistics where, I mean, once they take, even if he had succeeded in taking over, it probably just would have amounted to switching the roles, like shove everyone else back into the back and make them eat bug bars and they can enjoy the sushi.
Right, because at first he talks about like when Gilliam asks him what he wants to do, and he's like, "I'm gonna kill them, right? I'm gonna kill Wilford. I'm gonna kill like the people in the engine, and blah blah blah." And then, like that gradually becomes clear that he's not gonna do any of that. Like he wouldn't have even killed Wilford, I guess, if not for the kid. Or like he wouldn't have even like changed his, like he wouldn't have even done anything about him. Because Chris Evans was like already about to just basically accept everything he just told him, which is kind of amazing. That like I felt like someone compared that scene to that scene in The Matrix with the architect in like the second Matrix, where like the architect dude pops up and then like explains everything in this really anticlimactic scene, and I was like, this was so it was not like that scene, because like this scene was kind of awesome. Like, I really enjoyed that scene. The architect, I remember just being like really weirded out by it, and like, what is this even doing here? Yeah, exactly. And like, that was just like completely strange. Here is like Ed Harris. I really enjoyed him too, and I liked that Chris Evans was like completely ready to just like, okay, sure, dude, you won by the end. Like, he didn't even doesn't even touch him. He doesn't even do anything to him. He just like makes him steak that he doesn't eat, or like he eats a bit, or whatever.
Well, he did. Yeah, yeah. He doesn't do anything until the girl opens up the panel and shows him that the little boy is inside. Yeah,
and but like that's so weird. Like, why didn't he like live in that back of that train car forever? And like suddenly, like, he forgets all that this Wilford guy has done to him. Like,
it's like, yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's more just like the realization that it's not gonna matter. Like, you know, basically, without blowing up the train and escaping, you know, Wilford is basically right. There's a finite amount of resources that they have, and they're spread out the way that they're spread out. And even if he kills him, like, then he just has to become him, and there's really no one wants to eat bug bars. So if you can make someone eat nothing but bug bars and you don't have to eat any, you're just gonna do that, because that's at least
I want to eat the bug bars.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing that I was thinking about, and it's
totes bomb,
it can be extrapolated to the real world, is that, you know, there's a finite amount of resources and we don't want to share them, so we're okay with other people basically eating the equivalent of bug bars as long as we can keep our standard of living. And because there's enough stuff, we produce enough stuff that everyone could have an okay life, and our standard of living would go down, but everyone else in the world would go way up for them. But we just don't do that because it's too inconvenient for us.
Right. And I guess by making it that far to the engine, Chris Evans kind of automatically joins the ranks of those who kind of have everything that they need and more. He kind of maybe doesn't want to go back to where he was. Yeah.
Delicious steaks.
Steaks are pretty good.
But
steaks have a nice sound to them.
Would you be willing to eat like one steak every 2 years and then bug bars most of the other time?
Not bug bars, something not as bug oriented. I'll eat lettuce for the rest of the years.
Yeah, but how
I'm pretty sure science is gonna solve all these problems, so I'm not really worried about it.
We grew up.
They're just gonna figure out a way to turn like one type of matter into another type of matter. We'll just be done with it.
Just turn carbon into something else.
Yep.
Maybe that's what the CJ7 stuff was supposed to do, or whatever it's called. CJ7 is the that one movie.
I need to leave, so I mean, you guys can also just keep talking about it.
I actually have to go too. So
we can wrap it up. Yeah.
Anything else to say? I like the action.
I like the ending.
It was a weird movie.
I liked a lot.
Sure was.
Okay. All right, people.
All right, everyone.
I like the production design a lot, actually. The way that the back car and the front car was designed.
Yes. There's a shark in it, too. For shark lovers.
Yeah,
I think it was.
I'm sure Shark will be very happy to see that there was a shark in
it. Yeah, I mean, that's what he's referencing.
Yeah. Shark will be very happy to see that.
Ooh, he was.
Okay.
Yay!
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this podcast.
See ya. Bye-bye. We'll
see you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.